Coming to you in hypersonic ultra maximum high definition from the depths of the interwebs and straight into your ear holes, it's the Cinema Geekly Podcast. Featuring all of the people's names I wasn't paid enough to say in this intro.
Cinema Geekly Podcast, episode 171. It is Anthony Lewis and Aurora Bubbaloo. Hi, Aurora!
Hello!
You don't really get to do this part of the podcast very often, or this part of you don't venture into this part of the network very often.
Mm-hmm.
but we are talking about a topic that must be discussed.
Yes.
And you are the only person available to discuss it with me on this day. Therefore, here we are. But before we talk about Avengers Infinity War, and by the way, this will give people a nice long gap to turn this off if they haven't seen it yet. Because as per usual, we do not have a spoiler policy when it comes to this show. All of our shows, when we're reviewing or talking about big movies, they are very full of spoilers. So this is...
Yep.
Advanced warning, number one, you'll get one more before we start talking about it. Before we do that, though, I want to bring up some news about Star Trek, a subject that you and I are both very interested in.
Mm-hmm.
This is why I'm glad it's not Glenn here, because he doesn't care about Star Trek stuff, so I'd just be boring him. But there are, okay, so there is news on two Star Trek fronts. Of course, there's some news about Star Trek Discovery. They put up a video not that long ago where they sort of announced that they have started work on season two, although I would wager that they had already been doing work on season two before they popped that video out. Otherwise, otherwise they would not have had any of the footage that they had of right. sets and things like that. Did you see the video by chance?
No, I haven't.
So there are some very teasery looking images of some uniforms that have a lot more color in them than what we were seeing. They looked much more similar to TOS era uniforms.
Did it look like they were like it was more set in the original series?
The sets, I
style.
They didn't give any looks of any particular sets,
okay,
or anything like that. There were some very quick shots of some uniforms that were very sort of reminiscent looking. So they're obviously doing work on that right now and filming episodes. And the other big piece of news was that they announced the casting of Anson Mount, who was the star of Hell on Wheels, which is an AMC show. He was very briefly Black Bolt in the Marvel's Inhumans miniseries, which I made it two episodes into before I quit. It was not good. I don't know if you watched it.
I didn't.
Okay, it was not that great, but he was pretty good.
Okay.
In that show. And I've not seen all of Hell on Wheels. I've seen some of it, which is a show that takes place sometime after the American Civil War, where I think he is a former Confederate soldier or something, maybe? I don't remember. It's about being in the West and the railroad and stuff like that, but it's a pretty good show, and he is also very good in that. And it turns out he is a big Star Trek nerd.
Nice.
And they cast him to play Captain Christopher Pike in season two of Discovery, and some people have found some really good shots of this man and compared him to Jeffrey Hunter, who is the original Captain Pike, in the episodes, in the episode The Cage, the unaired Star Trek pilot, and they look pretty darn similar. So good casting, and he seems like a total nerd. One of the first things he talked about after being announced as playing this role was that in his work on Hell on Wheels, he was also kind of co-starring alongside Cole Meany, who is Chief O'Brien on TNG and DS9. And he's like, before people even have a chance to ask me, yes, I asked questions and talked about Star Trek with him all the time on Hell on Wheels. So he sounds like my kind of Star Trek
nerd. Like a true Star Trek nerd.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, if you're stuck in a room with somebody who was on Star Trek, it's all you could talk about.
Of course.
Okay, so that's some pretty good news. I know you and I both liked the first season of Discovery, and we're looking forward to more. I'm sort of going, I'm rewatching again with Jen, because she has not watched it.
Okay.
She is into it.
Nice.
We just watched the first Mirror Universe episode where all those twists happen.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And characters die. Yeah, she had a look of shock when that character death happens. She was really taken off guard by that. And I'm like, just wait, it gets really good. The end is really good. So I'm super excited to see where they go with season two. The other bits of news, Aurora, come from the movieverse of Star Trek, the Kelvin universe, as it has become known. And I'm sure you're aware of all of that Star Trek movie talk that had been going on for a while with Quentin Tarantino. And people are like, what is happening here? And prior to all of that, there had been a lot of discussion about a fourth movie with Chris Hemsworth returning.
Right.
To reprise his role as George Kirk in what would I would presume to be some sort of time travel-y movie, I'm guessing. Because he died in the first movie. But that sort of died down when this Quentin Tarantino thing sprung up, and it sounded like he was going to do something completely different. And it's finally, a few days ago, it finally felt like we got some news that is kind of bringing up all of these things and sort of confirming some stuff. So the first bit is that the Chris Hemsworth thing and the Quentin Tarantino thing are not the same thing, but they both might be happening. So it sounds like there's not one upcoming new Star Trek movie, but perhaps two.
Do you think that maybe they're going to make like a prequel?
So I don't know. Okay, so what I've read so far is that Star Trek IV looks like it's going to have Chris Hemsworth returning as George Kirk, which is a huge get right now. When they cast him in the original JJ movie, he was relatively unknown, except to like watchers of Australian soap operas and things like that. Chris Hemsworth was not Thor, and especially not what Thor has now become. Chris Hemsworth is a mega movie star right now.
Yes.
Getting him is pretty crazy. So it sounds like they're going to be doing a fourth movie with Chris Hemsworth returning to play George Kirk. And it sounds like it'll be some sort of time travel-y type thing, I would presume. And they have focused on Jim Kirk's relation with his father. It's kind of been a heavy minor plot point over the course of the last few movies they've done. To me, I think the biggest piece of news really from all of this is that a woman named S.J. Clarkson is going to be directing it, the first woman to direct a Star Trek film.
Nice.
Which is crazy. She might even be the first woman to direct anything of Star Trek. I'm not positive on that.
You might be right.
I don't have the numbers.
You might be right. I think you're right.
But she has done a lot of great... So she's mostly done TV work. But her TV work and directing is excellent. She's directed episodes of Bates Motel, Dexter, Orange is the New Black, The Defenders, and Jessica Jones.
Ooh.
So she's got some quality work under her
belt. I like it already.
Yeah, I like it too. So this is great. I'm a big fan of this. But the Quentin Tarantino thing is not dead either.
Hmm.
So it turns out the Tarantino thing is a separate pitch altogether, which is still, it would happen after this fourth movie. And it sounds like, so it's still being written, according to the sources on this. But according to the Hollywood Reporter, who was talking about this, the film is, quote, understood to be set in a separate timeline.
Oh, my gosh.
So I don't know if they're starting a new timeline. Like, I don't know if this is going to be next-gen reboot. I don't know if it's going to take place in the original Prime timeline. Who knows?
I just don't make it complicated, please. Just
yeah, as long as we're not too confused.
Yeah, don't try to be too edgy.
No, but this is good. But this is good news for Star Trek fans.
Yes,
this is the most Star Trek content at one time that mm-hmm. we've had in forever.
Yep.
So I'm willing to take it. I'm actually really excited about this fourth movie now.
Mm-hmm.
I like the work that the director has done. Chris Hemsworth was returning. I know Star Trek has done time travel over and over and over again, but
yep.
It feels like this has got some good. It's already got some good built-in story behind it.
Yeah, we have Chris Hemsworth appear in the movie as Thor.
That would be even better. I mean, it would make no sense. I don't know if Paramount can work that out with Disney, but. That would be pretty incredible.
That would be amazing.
I mean, he's going to bring eyes to it that he would not have brought beforehand.
Yeah.
So that's always a good thing. More people getting exposed to Star Trek for me is always a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. How are you? How do you feel about all of this? This heap of Star Trek stuff.
I mean, I'm excited, of course. But like I said, don't try to make it too complicated because. I feel like this is a chance to get people to like Star Trek, right? People that mm-hmm. have not seen it before, because we love it already. Like, you don't have to convince me to like Star Trek. I love it already.
Yeah, predisposed, because it's got the name on it already. But
yeah, I mean, I'm going to watch it. I'm going to go see the movies, of course. But people that are not familiar with Star Trek or that are new to it, this is their chance to get into it. So that's why I don't want it to be too complicated that only Trekkies know what's going on. You know what I mean?
Yes. Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Now, there's been talk that this here fourth Star Trek movie in the Kelvin universe could signal the end of this particular crew's run. So the new Tarantino movie taking place in a different timeline, you know, maybe that's something that spawns from this movie, this fourth movie that does have seemingly time travel implications.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe something happens and it introduces us to something brand new.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's kind of exciting. I'm a little worried because I don't know exactly what's happening here. But it's kind of like a good worry.
Yeah.
It's a good problem to have. That
yes.
What are we going to do with all this Star Trek?
Exactly.
So I'm going to be okay with it, I think. Before we hop into talking about Avengers, there are a couple of other Marvel-y things we should talk about. Did you see the new Venom trailer before you went in to see it? Because I saw it in the theater.
I saw it before.
Okay.
Yeah.
I saw the original trailer they popped out, the one that famously had no Venom in it.
Right.
And everyone was like, what the hell? This trailer does have Venom in it. At the very end.
Yes.
And it shows a lot of venom-y things happening to Eddie Brock, but we don't see Venom itself until the very end. So what did you make of the new trailer for this? Is this something you're excited for?
I really don't. I'm not that hyped about it. Like, yeah, cool. It's not like something I wanted.
Sure.
But they are going to give it to us, so sure, fine.
Yeah, I'll accept it and give it a shot.
I'll accept it. I was confused with the first trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second trailer We get to see more of the story and Venom.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I didn't feel excited to watch it.
Yeah.
Like, when I saw the trailer for Thor Ragnarok, I was like, I need to watch this movie. Mm-hmm. This one, I was like, I might see it, I might not, I don't know. So it didn't give me any, like, amazing reason to watch it.
Sure. So this is a confusing movie to me. So what I've been able to gather is that Tom Holland is going to be in this movie for something as Peter Parker / Spider-Man. Though this movie...
But what is the timeline of this movie? Where does it fit?
I have no idea. This is, as far as I know, is not part of the MCU. As far as I know, this is Sony and their half of the ownership of Spider-Man and their full ownership of Venom and stuff. This is them and their movie.
Mm.
And maybe this takes place in the universe, but it isn't part of the MCU. It's definitely not part of the MCU. Because if it was, I think they would have come up with something more interesting than what they've done here.
Yeah.
It looks fine to me.
Right.
But fine does not cut it these days with superhero movies, as we're about to discuss. This just looks like your run-of-the-mill origin story. I like Tom Hardy, although I think his accent is kind of weird in this movie. I don't know what he's going for exactly, but...
And do you think... I also thought that the acting was kind of weird, too.
A lot of it did not feel quite
And he's
right.
a good actor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I like him.
But he... In this trailer, I don't know, It didn't feel like the actor I know.
Yeah. Nothing stood out that looked... in the premise or the concept didn't look that interesting. It does sort of seem like a pretty bland... a bland superhero movie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about Ant-Man and the Wasp in a little bit. And Ant-Man did not have the most incredible origin story movie of all time, but the suit and the powers and things like that allowed them to do fun things that you hadn't watched before.
Right.
And the stuff they're showing with Venom in this, so it's, they've got the pretty bland seeming generic superhero origin story, and he's doing stuff that doesn't look all that different from what we see Spider-Man already do, where he's using, instead of using white webs, he's using black symbiote goo to grab things, and they're also building this as an anti-hero story, which apparently Venom is. I don't know that much about Venom in the comics, but apparently he was a villain that sort of became an anti-hero.
Mm-hmm.
And that is... also not an easy thing to do in the age where we've made a lot of really good anti-heroes.
Right.
Like, we saw Walter White become Heisenberg in Breaking Bad, and that was a really great anti-hero story.
Right.
I don't know if Eddie Brock does that in this movie, where he starts doing some bad shit for good reasons, and he's likable, and you root for him in the same way. But it's really tough to do an anti-hero story in the age where we've... TV has done it stunningly well, where we've had a bunch of really great anti-heroes. The Punisher, his run recently, stuff like that, in comic book land. So, I thought Venom looked really cool at the end, like the CG and stuff. It looked like how I recall Venom looking, but, boy, outside of that, I kind of just... Yeah, it's like, look, I'll catch it on Netflix.
Exactly. That's exactly what I said.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
let's talk about the second trailer for Ant-Man and the Wasp, because this was, after what happened in Avengers, we needed something that was a little bit on the brighter side.
Lighthearted?
We needed a little more lightheartedness. this is the second trailer for Ant-Man and the Wasp, and we got... a lot more than we got in the first trailer, and we got to see more of the secondary characters.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of the second trailer? And by the way, I presume that this movie takes place prior to the events of Infinity War.
That's my assumption too. Yes. Yeah. I'm all for it. I don't know if I have a unpopular opinion or not, but I love Ant-Man.
Yeah, me too.
I love the first movie. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they're going to have the Wasp,
yes,
just makes it, that's enough. I didn't have to see the trailer. All I had to see was the title of the movie.
Yeah, she looks and like she's going to steal this. Board.
Oh, yeah, she totally does.
Everything they showed in this trailer that she's doing looks so
amazing.
Cool. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And Paul Rudd he's so good in that character too. Like, it's the type of movie that you go watch just to have fun.
Yeah. I mean, these so a lot of this, like, things that separate Ant-Man from, say, like, Venom. Some of it is the premise and the concept compared to, like, what we've seen before. But a lot of it is also the right casting and the right chemistry and stuff like that. And for some reason, a lot of those things stuck out to me when I watched Ant-Man the first time.
Yeah.
Even the trailers for that movie, it stuck out. Whereas, you know, I never quite got that feeling watching the Venom trailer. So,
I mean, they made you feel something for an ant.
Yeah.
I almost cried.
Antony, yeah. I mean, I share a name with this flying ant, more or less. It was really well done. They kind of expanded on some of the bits that they showed from the first trailer, like the minivan literally being a minivan.
Right.
But yeah, all of that was fun. Scott Lang's gang, his thieving gang, now have what look like a professional office and everything that they work out of.
Right.
But they've apparently grown no smarter since the first film, which is great. Those guys need to be exactly who they are, because
they're perfect.
They were perfect.
Yeah.
So I'm glad they're back. It's great to see Michael Douglas back. This is just lining up. The villain is a comic book character, Ghost. I think it's Ghost. Is being played by a woman this time. I don't think it's a woman in the comics, but it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
They use the shrinking tech and the when they shrink down really, like, really small, I can't remember what it's called now. When they get, like, atom-sized and stuff. The quantum realm or whatever.
Quantum realm, yeah.
And I think she uses some of that stuff in her suit or whatever to, like, phase through things. There are some theories, Aurora. Maybe we should talk about them when we start talking about Infinity War. But it does seem like they are going into the quantum realm in this movie. As has been spoiled a little bit by the fact that the original Wasp is in this movie. They gave this away forever ago because they announced her casting.
Mm-hmm.
Michelle Pfeiffer is in this movie.
Right.
As Janet Van Dyne, the original Wasp. So, and as we know from the first Ant-Man movie, she was lost in that quantum realm, presumed dead. Clearly she's not. But there is some theories about this whole quantum realm thing with Ant-Man the Wasp. And the events of Avengers Infinity War, Aurora. So I guess we should probably start talking about it. So once more, again, if you have not seen this movie, looking at the box office, I don't know, you've got to be like one of like five people who haven't seen it yet. But if you are, if you haven't watched it, Ben, I'm talking to you. Possibly you haven't watched it yet. Don't listen until you've watched the movie.
Yeah.
This is going to be full of spoilers. So let's talk about it, Aurora. Your initial thoughts on Infinity War. You got to see this as part of like a birthday celebration, right?
Yeah, I saw it on my birthday.
Well, happy birthday. It was full of sadness.
It was full of sadness, yes.
It was so full of it.
I actually want to see it again, because when we were at the movie theater, there were three young guys behind us that were totally wasted. Totally wasted, which I don't know why you would go to a movie like that.
Especially when this, like, layered.
Yeah.
They probably don't remember anything that happened.
Oh, they couldn't stand up when the movie ended.
Wow.
Like, I was actually worried for them. So that kind of ruined my experience a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
because I kept looking back and I kept missing things in the movie.
Were they like distracting? Was it like a car crash where you couldn't look away, or was it just...
Yeah, they were just loud, and one of them dropped something in the floor, and then all of them pulled up their like flashlights in their cell phones, and they were like flashing everybody, and it just...
It's amazing they didn't get escorted out.
I think some people complained, but I don't know what was happening. But anyway, other than that, I really, really, really liked it. Mm-hmm. I went to it without knowing anything. Like, I avoided spoilers like crazy. Yeah, I didn't want to know anything. And it really took me by surprise, everything that happened in the end. But I mean, that's a big thing that happens. But for me, the best part of the movie is everything that happened in Wakanda.
Oh, that was all, like, all the fun.
That was amazing. Especially after Thor appears.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Like, I don't know if it happened in your movie theater, but in mine, everybody started clapping when Thor appeared.
Yeah, it happened in mine as well.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even know where to start with this thing.
It's too many. It's too many things to cover.
this is their Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Like, the epic grand scale. People thought, like, the Avengers was, you know, widening things and making it this epic spectacle. You know, they're like, oh, well, they tried to top it in Age of Ultron. I mean, this movie makes those movies seem so small.
Yeah.
Yep. And so contained and so tiny.
Mm-hmm.
This thing was a monstrosity, which is normally a bad thing in a movie. But what happened, stunningly and surprisingly, is the Russo brothers somehow cracked the code on this. They managed to take this unwieldy thing, which probably should not have been makeable...
Right.
To cover so many characters in so many locations into one cohesive story that you could follow, it does not seem possible, but they did it. And not only did they do it, because it's also one thing to just manage it, but it's also one thing to not just manage it, but to make it really good.
Right.
They should just give these guys all of the technical awards.
Yeah.
At the Oscars, just for the achievement of this movie.
Yes.
Because it is an achievement to do something like this.
It is amazing.
That many movie stars, that many stories and characters to try to give everybody something.
Mm-hmm.
And they managed to do it. I mean, obviously, you're going to get some people who get a little bit less. And some people who are going to get a lot more. But they, for the most part, managed to give everybody something.
Yeah.
Okay, so we should probably try to maybe go through the story really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then sort of break down what we liked, if there was anything we did not like.
Okay.
And so on and so forth. Chronologically speaking, this movie starts like right after the end credit scene of Thor Ragnarok.
Right.
Where they run into Thanos' ship. Actually, before we start talking about the story, I forgot about this until just the second, but there were some questions that people had about this movie that were not answered in the movie.
Right.
And believe it or not, I don't know if you saw this, but the Russo brothers actually gave, or one of the Russo brothers gave some of the answers to these questions to a high school, like a room full of high school students.
Yep.
So one of those first questions, because like this we start like on that scene and like everybody's dead except for like a few people, and I'm like, wait a minute, Korg's dead, and what about Valkyrie? She's dead too. Like, where are they?
Mm-hmm.
And they confirm that Thanos only killed half of the people on the ship, and other people made it away in. like escape pods or something, and they say that this includes Valkyrie. They did not confirm whether or not Korg is dead. They didn't say he was dead, but they didn't say he wasn't dead.
Mm.
But they just noted that they weren't willing to confirm, which to me always says, well, he's not dead.
Right.
If he was dead, you'd just say he's dead. But you can't kill Korg. Come on. He was like my favorite thing in that movie. Anyway, and Valkyrie also got away. So it's like a la Sif in Thor Ragnarok, where Hela went in and killed like all of the Warriors 3, except for mm-hmm. Sif, who apparently was not on the planet.
Mm.
So it's one of those situations. And Thanos gets the Tesseract from Loki. Right. Puts the Power Stone. He's already got the Power Stone from Xandar, which they did not show. I wonder if that's going to be deleted scene stuff, or if it's just one of those things where he just, hey, you remember that Guardians of the Galaxy planet? He stopped by there and killed a bunch of people and took the stone. The end. And you don't get to see any of it. But he takes the Space Stone from Loki, and Loki, at the end of the day, Aurora tries to be a good brother to Thor finally, and pays for it with his life, presumably. Loki appears to be killed by Thanos.
Right.
Also, Hulk fights Thanos.
Yeah.
And gets his ass kicked. So much so that we don't see Hulk for the rest of the movie. We see Bruce Banner for the rest of the movie, but...
He's embarrassed. He's embarrassed.
Hulk is... Yeah. Hulk is having some self-esteem issues.
Yeah.
After getting brutalized by Thanos. And he kills Heimdall. And who manages, before he is killed, manages to Bifrost Hulk back to Earth. And Thor is left to die, where he eventually runs into the Guardians of the Galaxy. And then they sort of splinter off. Thor is looking to get a weapon to kill Thanos for revenge. And the rest of the Guardians... I believe go looking for... Are they looking... Oh, they go to the... they have to go to nowhere.
Right.
To the Collector. To the Collector. Who has mm-hmm. the reality gem. As was told to them by Thor. Like on Earth, Bruce Banner crashes through Doctor Strange's apartment while him and Wong are arguing over what sandwich to get. Right. Which was pretty great. And apparently Wong only carries around rupees, which the exchange rate is not favorable to the American dollar. I think he had thousands of rupees or whatever, but it equaled like $1.50 or something. It wouldn't buy him a sandwich, let alone in New York City.
Right.
Good luck. I presume sandwiches there are $50 a piece. I don't know. I've never been, but it's a guess.
It's pretty close. It's pretty close.
He warns them about Thanos. Doctor Strange goes to get Tony Stark, who is talking with Pepper about... I actually don't remember what they were talking about. Wedding stuff, maybe?
Yeah, it was wedding stuff and basically just taking it easy.
Yeah, so he shows up. Doctor Strange shows up in a portal with Bruce to get Tony Stark, and they're telling him all about what's going on when... Thanos' children arrive in their flying donut ships, and two of them...
I'm sorry, I have to interrupt. I love that scene because she is, this guy's coming, right? They go to Iron Man and they say, basically, like, the world is gonna end. That's basically what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, are you serious?
We're planning a wedding. We're
planning a wedding here.
Do you know how much work we've put into this?
I'm like, you know that if the world ends, you won't get a wedding.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You just thought that was hilarious.
I didn't even think about it. It was so early in the movie, I was just absorbing everything and trying to take everything in as it was happening. And I didn't even... I'm going to totally look for that again when I watch it the second time. That's awesome. The Thanos' children arrive in their space donuts, and two of them, I think it's Corvus Glaive and Cull Obsidian, the big guy, they're trying to get Doctor Strange's Time Stone, and the other two, which are Proxima Midnight, and the other guy, whose name always... I always forget the other guy's name. They are going after Vision and his Mind Stone, but Vision is off with Wanda Maximoff, who, by the way, they never exactly tell us precisely how they managed to escape, but we do see at the end of Civil War, Captain America goes to the raft.
Right.
And he presumably breaks out everybody except for Hawkeye and Scott Lang, who we are told have a deal, or managed to strike a deal with the feds, and they're on house arrest.
Right.
So they're at home, and they can't do anything, which is something we see bits and pieces of in the Ant-Man and the Wasp trailer. We see with, like, an ankle monitor and stuff. But yeah, the rest of them are out. So Wanda is presumably in hiding with the rest of her friends, like Black Widow and Cap and Bucky and Sam. They're all hiding out. And Vision occasionally leaves to go be with her because they have a thing.
Right.
And Vision can also make himself look like Paul Bettany. Which is great. He has managed to control the Mind Stone to a degree in which he can make himself appear completely human.
Right.
But he gets attacked and wounded. By the way, a smart move, a smart storytelling move that you wound essentially the most powerful of the Avengers.
Yep.
Because Vision is essentially Superman. Like, his body is made... Yeah, his body is made of Captain America's shield, essentially.
Yeah.
And he has a super powerful Infinity Stone in his head.
Yep.
There's almost nothing he can't do. So having him sort of be hurt and injured early on so he can't participate that much is a smart idea. But basically, neither of them get the stones right away. Vision manages to escape with the help of the rest of Team Captain America. And Cull Obsidian gets flung to some... I don't know, like Antarctica or something through one of Doctor Strange's portals. But he ends up being kidnapped and taking aboard the Space Donut, along with Tony Stark. While all this is going on, Peter Parker gets a Spidey Sense thing and he tries to help. And Tony gives him the Iron Spider suit.
And which was amazing.
It was really cool. And he tries to send him back down to Earth, but Spider-Man... he's
a kid.
Stowing away. Yeah, he's a kid, so he's stowing away on the Space Donut to try to help Tony. I feel like there's so many, like, listen to this. There's so many threads going on.
Yep.
So basically, they managed to kill one of the Thanos' magic kid, whose name I don't remember, and just how they killed the alien in Aliens by blowing a hole in the side and sucking him out into space. And then they go and they crash that ship on Titan, which is where they're supposed to be meeting Thanos. The Guardians, they get to nowhere. They're looking for the Reality Stone. They think they've found Thanos threatening to kill the Collector if he doesn't get the stone. And then Gamora kills Thanos. Which was pretty surprising, actually. they actually did this a few times, and it was so cleverly done. Because they got me every time they did this trick, which is so dumb when you think about how much power Thanos had. But for some reason, they did it in such a way where they got me every time. So she kills him, and I'm like, what the hell is happening here?
Yeah, I was like, well, that was quick.
Yeah, Star-Lord was like, wow.
Credits.
That was easy, and it's just da-da-da-da, and they just go to the credits. But it wasn't. It was a trick, a test. Thanos had arrived well before they did. He's already killed the Collector. He already has the Reality Stone, and everything that they saw and we saw was manipulated reality.
Yeah, and you know, this is a good example of this movie is one of the few movies, and as you go talking about the plot, it's going to be more evident, but it's one of the few movies where, as you go through it, you feel beaten down. Like, every single time you think they have a chance against Thanos, he is, like, overpowered. Like, there's no way. As you continue in the movie, you're like, there's no way they're going to win. Like, there's no way.
There were two times in the movie where they came close. But one time was a total troll. But one time They came really close.
Yeah.
So he kidnaps Gamora, Thanos does, before turning the Avengers or the rest of the Guardians into, like, spaghetti, essentially.
Right. Mm-hmm.
He, like, unravels them with his time stone or his reality stone. So he kidnaps her and is taking her back to his ship, where we also run into Nebula, who's being tortured. Thanos is trying to find the Soul Stone, which it turns out Gamora was quest with finding.
Mm-hmm.
And she apparently never found, but Thanos never believed that. She believed that she did find it, when in fact she sort of did. She found a map to how to find it.
Right.
And she knows where it's located, but never told Thanos, and her and Nebula were never going to tell him. And due to his continuing torturing of Nebula, Gamora gives up the location. And that's where they are headed off to. And I think it's at that point the Guardians go to Titan, where they run into Doctor Strange and Tony Stark and Peter Parker. And once they clear up the confusion that they don't, you know, neither of them are working for Thanos,
mm-hmm.
or in favor of Thanos, they try to start devising a plan, because they know this is where Thanos is eventually going to show up.
Right.
Meanwhile, everybody is sort of back on Earth preparing for this invasion-y thing, and everybody gathers up and they're headed to Wakanda.
Mm-hmm.
Which was all great, and seeing all of these people getting to interact was great. Meanwhile, Thor and Rocket and Groot meet giant Peter Dinklage.
Yes.
Which was unexpected. So we knew he was in the movie, and people thought he was voicing one of Thanos' children, I think was the thought. But no, he played a dwarf, but a giant dwarf.
Yeah, that was amazing too.
And he is the guy who forged Mjolnir, the mm-hmm. hammer.
Mm-hmm.
And we found out he also forged the Infinity Gauntlet for Thanos as well.
Right.
And Thanos killed everybody except for him after he forged it. And he also fucked up his hands, so he couldn't forge anything mm-hmm. else. And he shut down the forging facility, which was built around a star.
Right.
So basically, Thor uses all of his manly muscles to kind of not just restart the forge, but hold it open enough for them to be able to melt things down. They're making a new weapon, an axe, a really powerful axe that basically has the ability to wield all the power that Thor did before,
mm-hmm.
but apparently also allows him, it gives him like Bifrost abilities, so he can also like travel even without a Bifrost.
Right.
And in the midst of forging it, Groot uses his arm to make a handle. So basically Thor has a big axe with a Groot handle,
yep.
which is awesome. And they're headed to Wakanda. So, Thanos arrives on Titan and, oh, no, we forgot about the part where Thanos gets the Soul Stone. That's
right.
A really huge moment in the movie. So they go to the planet where the Soul Stone is, and they are greeted by an entity that not only knows them, but knows, you know, the Soul Stone rules, which is you have to get, you have to sacrifice a soul to get the Soul Stone.
Mm-hmm.
You have to sacrifice the thing that you most love. The mind-boggling thing about this was the keeper of the Soul Stone was Red Skull.
Yeah.
Which was like, holy shit. I mean, maybe everybody else forgot about Captain America, the First Avenger, but I sure as hell didn't. Because he got Red Skull at the end of that movie, holding the Tesseract, got sucked into space.
Mm-hmm.
Got sucked into a portal, never to be seen again.
Yep.
But they went back to it here.
Yeah, I loved all those little moments where things that were like loose ends in other movies just came together in this one. That was amazing.
Oh, there were so many. Like Mantis... Like when somebody mentions something about superheroes or whatever, she says like Kevin Bacon,
yeah.
which is from the first Guardians movie.
Yes.
There's so many yep. things. Rocket looking at Winter Soldier's metal arm.
Yeah.
Because he loves taking people's prosthetics.
And he gave Thor the eye he stole from the last movie.
Yes. Because, yes, Thor now has two eyes again.
Yes.
So many things. Like, they're not just weaving together huge plot elements. They're weaving together tiny things from other movies that, if you paid attention, were huge payoffs.
Yep.
Gamora's like, well, you're fucked now because you've never loved anything. You can't sacrifice the thing you love the most. But what Gamora does not realize, despite their twisted, Thanos is a twisted guy, and he has a twisted perspective. Gamora never saw or felt love in their fake father-daughter relationship, but Thanos mm-hmm. did.
Mm-hmm.
And he really does care about Gamora. But he cares about doing this more, I guess.
Yes.
And throws Gamora off a cliff, and she's dead.
Yeah.
Like, we see her splat. There's blood, and she's mm-hmm. not moving. She's very clearly dead. He gets the Soul Stone, and he goes to Titan, where the combined Guardians and Avengers try to stop him in what was a great fight.
Mm-hmm.
Which was basically them just, like, trying to hold him down.
Yeah.
Essentially. Because there's all of this fight. There's like a moment. After all of this fighting, they've been fighting for 10 minutes on screen. After all of this stuff, and finally, like, Tony hits him with something and scratches his cheek, and there's a little bit
mm-hmm.
of blood.
Yes.
And he's like, all of that for like a drop of blood.
Yep.
And it's like, holy crap, you're mm-hmm. right. They haven't done anything to this guy. He's just essentially been swatting at flies this whole time.
Yeah, he's just so overpowered. It's insane.
But there is a moment where they do manage to halt him. And, like, Mantis drops down through a portal and lands on him and is trying to put him to sleep. And it's, you know, I think it's Tony and Peter trying to pull the gauntlet off of him. And it's, like, at that moment where everybody realizes that Gamora's not there and they realize that Gamora is dead.
Mm-hmm.
And, poor, dumb Peter Quill.
Yep.
Probably could have saved everything right there had they gotten that gauntlet off of him and they were close.
Mm-hmm.
But he killed Gamora. And Gamora, earlier, there's an earlier scene where she makes Peter promise him that if he gets a hold of her, that Peter should kill her. And he tries to, but Thanos turns his gun into, like, basically like a bubble gun.
Yep.
And he can't kill her.
Right.
He tried. And now she's dead, and he just can't control himself, because in a lot of ways he's sort of a child who never grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And he just starts leaning into Thanos. Unfortunately, that sort of wakes Thanos up out of his thing, and they don't get the gauntlet off of him, and he beats the shit out of all these guys, and then disappears. He's headed to Earth for that last Infinity Stone. Actually, you know what? He beats the shit out of everybody, then he's gonna kill Tony Stark, and then I can't believe I'm forgetting this. This is like, maybe the most important part of the movie. Doctor Strange gives him the Time Stone.
Yeah.
And then he goes to Earth.
Right.
So everybody is down on Earth, fighting in Wakanda. All the Wakanda stuff is incredible, by the way.
Amazing.
All those groups of people fighting, Bruce Banner's fighting in the Hulkbuster armor. And all Thanos' children bring down these crazy animal thingies to, like, help them fight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a gargantuan battle. Huge.
Yep.
Bigger than anything you've seen in quite some time. And then things are looking a little overwhelming, and then Thor shows up. He just bifrosts out of nowhere and kills, like, everything.
Yep.
It's awesome.
Amazing.
And then there's, like, a too-many-to-count dialogue moments between characters interacting for the first time. You get to see, like, all of the badass women working
mm-hmm.
together.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many amazing moments. And then Thanos shows up, going after Vision's stone, which Shuri has been trying to take it out of his head.
Right.
Safely this whole time, but things got out of hand. They had to stop that procedure. Their last hope was that Scarlet Witch uses her Mind Stone given powers to destroy the stone, which would kill Vision. And it's this great moment at the end where everyone's trying to hold Thanos back and he's wiping out everybody. And she's trying to destroy it while also trying to hold him off. And then she does it. The stone cracks and then it breaks.
Right.
And I'm like, wow, holy shit. I wasn't expecting that. Wow, crazy. I'm like, wow, I guess they sort of stopped him. And then me being so dumb, like, as soon as he started rewinding shit, I'm like, oh, yeah, of course.
He's got it seemed like it worked, I said out loud, I was like, he has the time stone. Like, he can just go back in time.
Yeah, and he did.
And he did.
And he ripped it out of Vision's head, killing him. And he put it in. And then he snapped his finger, which was his goal all along, was to balance the universe, wipe out half of civilization across the universe to bring balance. And he does, and so many people turn to dust.
Yep.
So many huge main characters.
It was so powerful that even the after credit scene had people turning into dust.
Yeah, in the post-credit scene, Maria Hill and Nick Fury turned to dust.
Yep.
But yeah, bunch of huge people. Winter Soldier, dust. A lot of the Guardians. Star-Lord, dust. Drax, dust.
Spider-Man,
he's dust. Doctor Strange, dust.
Yep.
Black Panther, dust. Yeah. So many of these characters. And then at the end, Thanos does exactly what he said he was going to do. He went back to his crappy shack on Titan where his house used to be. And he sat there with a look of relief on his face. The job has been done.
Yep.
And they go to sad-ass credit music.
Mm-hmm.
No fancy credits. It's just a black screen with the characters' names and text. No fancy credits, no big score. And then there's that scene at the end where Maria Hill and Nick Fury get turned to ash as well. But before Nick Fury does it, he has some sort of crazy-ass-looking pager from the 90s.
Yeah.
I think it's a space pager of some sort. And he sends some sort of message before he turns to ash. And the last image we see is apparently it being the message being received by Captain Marvel.
Yes.
So there are so many things that happen story-wise. Is there anything that you didn't like in the movie that didn't quite work for you?
I think the only thing that I didn't like was the absence of the Hulk.
Yeah.
Because I was really, you know, they did this thing that, you know, sometimes these people do, that they show you something in the trailer that's not in the movie. And in the trailer, you see the Hulk fighting in Wakanda. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to see that fight with the Hulk. And the fact that I didn't see it was kind of like disappointing, but it's a minor thing. They made it up with everything else.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are some things you can get nitpicky about when it comes to Thanos' motivation for what he was doing.
Right.
A lot of it boils down to, well, he has to be the villain of the movie because there has to be a villain in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And you can take, Killmonger was a great villain in Black Panther.
Yeah.
With a motivation that you could understand where he was coming from.
Mm-hmm.
But even as great as he was, you can still tear his argument apart. Because what he's doing is too extreme.
Right.
And Thanos is in the same situation here. I've seen people, you can, you know, make the argument very easily of like, well, why didn't he just snap his finger and provide people with more resources and food?
Right.
Instead of killing half of them.
Yep.
But then he would not be the villain.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
there wouldn't be any movie.
why would anybody care? Oh, I'm on this quest to provide people with more. I don't think people have enough, so I'm on this quest to make sure that they have more food and more resources.
Right.
People can all live happily ever. Well, then you don't have a movie at that point.
Right,
you can't
right.
do it. You can't do that movie. So he has to be crazy, and he has to have, you know, an idea. I mean, and there's some other things that also do that as well. Like Doctor Strange has the Time Stone. Why didn't he just go back in time to when Thanos was a baby and kill him?
Yes.
Like, you know, you yes, You can.
But there, yeah.
But then you don't have a movie.
Exactly.
We have to have the movie. So some of that stuff, yes, you can pick it apart to that degree. I saw some people who thought that the Peter Quill ruining everything for everybody, punching Thanos. I saw a lot of people say that they didn't think that that really worked for them because they didn't necessarily buy that Star-Lord and Gamora were that, like, because I guess you don't see it really develop to on screen. Like, you see her say, "I love you" to him, and he says it back to her.
Yeah.
But in the previous Guardians of the Galaxy movies, the relationship wasn't quite there.
Hmm.
Now, like,
for but I didn't see it as him being upset because she was his girlfriend. I saw it as, you know, in both Guardian of the Galaxy movies, they are a family.
Yeah.
So I didn't see it as a romantic thing. I saw it as one member of my family died.
Right. This is how I also took it.
Yeah.
I also looked at it from the perspective of timeline-wise. We've been told that the second Guardians of the Galaxy movie takes place not too long after the first. Like, just a few months after the first. Which takes place well before... that sets it before Age of Ultron, and it sets it before Civil War. And we're told all of those things are a couple of years in the past.
Right.
So time has progressed with them, that time we didn't get to see, but it makes sense that they're really... At the end of Guardians 2, it seemed like their relationship was blooming, and it makes sense that if 2 years or so have passed since then... that, you know, maybe their relationship had reached that stage.
Right.
I didn't really have a problem buying it.
That yeah, me it, neither.
That was, I guess, an issue for me. There was one thing that didn't quite work for me, but in some ways this movie isn't necessarily being made just for me. There are a lot of people, Aurora, I'm told anyway, because I don't know anybody like this, because everybody I know is like me. But I'm told there are people who don't pay attention to when movies come out. They don't really care about box office numbers. They don't feel like talking about movies on social media after they've come out. And for those people, all of this stuff probably... I know it worked great for my kids. My youngest daughter was heartbroken at the end of this movie.
Aww.
Because she doesn't understand that Black Panther or Spider-Man can't possibly be dead, because they have movies that haven't been released yet that have been announced. So she didn't get it. She didn't even realize there was another Avengers movie.
Yeah.
She just thought this was it.
Aww.
She's like, is this the end? She's like, they're all gone. Like, Groot died, and Groot is like her favorite.
Yeah, yeah.
She was devastated.
I can see that. This is a brutal movie for kids.
Yeah. She's 7. She handled it okay. It's not scary, but...
But still, I mean, if you, you know, if Spider-Man is your like your idol, yes, and you see him die in this movie.
Oh, his was by far the worst.
Yeah?
Because he is just a kid, and, like, everybody else was just like, what's happening? And then they're just like dust.
Yeah.
But he was, like, feeling it before it happened. He was scared made it known that he was scared.
Yep.
And, oh, it was heartbreaking to watch that. Excellent scene, but heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But yeah, so for me, it didn't quite work because I know that there's other movies coming out. I couldn't quite... I almost made it to suspend my disbelief at one point because they were killing off people who are the side characters, right? Like Bucky's dying.
Right, right, right.
Falcon or, you know, somebody else like that. But then when they start doing the big ones, Black Panther's gone, Spider-Man's gone, Star-Lord's gone, and I'm like, okay, well, they're not gone.
Yeah.
Which hurt it for me a little bit, but that's just because I know they're not gone.
Yeah, I mean, I also thought that, you know, that there's a scene where Doctor Strange tries to see every possible outcome.
Yes.
And he tells them that they won once. Like, he saw, like...
And 14 million
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, millions of outcomes, and all of them, only one made him win. So he knows what it was. So my theory is that even though this happened, this is part of the plan because this is what they know works for the win.
Okay. I mean, Aurora, I'm going to say this in a non-romantic way, but I love you. That I've already I was having this conversation already with my oldest.
Yeah.
Because I feel like they deliver that line in the movie. There's a moment in the movie where they're on Titan, mm-hmm. where the Avengers are talking with the Guardians,
right?
And Doctor Strange is in the back, levitating.
He looks like he's having a seizure.
Yeah, and they're like, "Is he okay?" And they go, and he was just like, "I was looking into the future, looking at all the future permutations of what would happen. Right. I looked at like 14 million or 6 million or whatever it was, and we only won once."
Mm-hmm.
And I was having this conversation with my daughter, and it's like, it's not like he went into a future room and looked at a scoreboard where it said Thanos a million, Avengers one. No, he actually looked at what happened.
Yeah, he lived through it.
They want you to, when he says that, the first thing that they want you to feel like is there's no way for us to win.
Right.
But if you think about it for a little bit longer, even though the odds are bad, they did win one time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know what they did to win, which he does because he went to the future, if you know what happens, then those odds don't matter. It does not matter, right, how great the odds are. You know what happened the one time. And if you do that, you can win.
Yep.
Now people will ask, why didn't he just say what it was? Well, number one, that would be spoilers because there's a second movie that hasn't come out yet.
But he can't tell them what it was because then they, right, will ruin it.
Right. Well, and seemingly, the plan involved him giving Thanos everything he wanted,
yep,
and letting Thanos do what he wanted,
right,
which meant killing a lot of people. How this pans out, I don't know, but I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think everything Doctor Strange did is because he knew this is what had to happen,
right,
because this is what happened in the scenario in which that they won.
Yep.
So, yeah. I'm so happy that you thought about it. I was going to bring it up because, like, this is my theory. What do you think? We have the same theory.
Yes, yes.
Also about people dying or who might be dead or who aren't dead. They did note that Gamora is not exactly dead in this Russo interview. So,
I mean, I'm pretty sure that something's going to happen, that they have to go back in time. They're going to go back in time, and everybody that's dead is going to be fine, including Gamora and probably Loki.
All right, so when Thanos snaps his fingers, he's got that moment where he wakes up in that misty thing or whatever,
mm-hmm,
and little tiny Gamora is there.
Right.
And basically, they said, that takes place, they're in the Soul Stone,
mm-hmm,
which means Gamora, part of her is in there. So,
right,
she's not completely gone. And I've been told in the comics that there have been people who have gone into the Soul Stone and come back out again.
Mm.
So it's entirely possible.
Okay.
It's entirely possible that she's not completely dead. Maybe some of these characters have been taken out for good. Maybe some more will happen by the end. Maybe a lot of people come back in the next movie, but some people don't make it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
some people get sacrificed. Like, I could totally see, I mean, so the two pillars of the MCU are still standing, like Tony Stark and Steve Rogers.
Right.
Are like these two big pillars. It's possible they could bring everybody back, but maybe at the cost of their own lives.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I would be upset if they bring everybody back. I think that it would be a better story if someone actually dies, or more than one person.
Yeah.
I would like that better. Which sounds awful that I'm wishing people to, yeah, be dead.
Well, we need the stakes for sure,
yeah,
to stick. I think it's entirely possible that the people who did not turn into ash are dead.
Okay.
It's with the exception of Gamora, because it's possible because of the Soul Stone stuff that she might be brought back. But Loki might be dead. Heimdall and Loki might definitely be,
I don't know,
like,
I mean,
permadead.
How many times have we thought that Loki's dead and he comes back?
Right. That is true. It's hard to say for certain, but
yeah,
it's possible. And maybe it's for the best. You know, maybe they sort of did their run with Loki, although I think maybe him and Thor could have deserved a bit more of a bigger, you know, brotherly moment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They tried to do one, and it was good, but I feel like for a character as highly established as Loki has been, that they could have maybe done more, but they've had so much on their plate in this movie. What I guess at the end of the day, Aurora, what would you give this? I've been struggling with this one for a while.
I mean,
score-wise.
I was trying to think, you know, where this movie ranks in my favorite Marvel movies, because for me, top two, like, still Guardians of the Galaxy is my favorite Marvel movie. And I would put Thor Ragnarok second. I really like that movie. But this one, I liked it. Is it my favorite? No.
Okay.
So I would give it maybe like a... Are we doing like 1 through 5?
Yeah, quarter scores are in there. All that good stuff.
I'll give it a 4.
Wow.
Yeah. But the only reason why I'm saying it is because I'm comparing it to my favorite Marvel movies that are 5s in my eyes.
I've only given... So this is different, because I talked to Glenn when we found out we couldn't do the, we wouldn't be able to squeeze in doing the show, and I didn't get, like, you know, full thoughts from him or whatever, but I asked him, you know, what would you give it, and he said 4, 4.5.
Okay.
Which I was stunned by, because usually Glenn doesn't go that big for ratings on superhero movies. I've only given a 5 to one Marvel movie. In the past, and that was the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie. It was my favorite Marvel movie, and I've given high marks to a lot of the movies. I've been wrestling with this one because I know that there's a few things that didn't quite work for me, but I realize that a lot of that is just because of the bubble I'm in. If I'm just looking at it from the story perspective, if I forget about the fact that I know there's going to be another Black Panther or another Spider-Man movie or another Guardians of the Galaxy movie, you know, if you forget about that stuff and you're just looking at it from the story perspective, you know, is it big and does it play well? Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. And it's just those, you know, it's those being in the bubble things that were getting in the way.
Right.
But if I dismiss those things... I think this is like 1A for me, like 1 and 1A, like Guardians and this movie.
Ooh,
I think
wow.
are my two favorite movies. I gave this a 5.
Wow.
I love this movie. I think a lot of it is probably, I think a lot of what is helping is that there were very high expectations for this, and I was not sure how they were going to handle it.
Yeah.
And they met and exceeded expectations and handled this movie in a way that I did not think was possible. There is one thing that I would like to say that is a negative in relation to this movie. And it's really only, it's nothing to do with the movie itself. It's in relation with other reviewers that I watch talk about this movie in non-spoilery terms. This is a long movie.
Yeah.
It was 2 hours and 36 minutes. And I saw review after review where people are like, this is a 2 hour and 36 minute movie, but it doesn't feel like it.
It didn't.
Okay, so you're saying this too. I felt every second of that 2 hours, 36 minutes, but not in a bad way. Okay. Not in like, oh, this is so long. Like, it felt long, but like the Lord of the Rings movies feel long to me. I've seen, you know, I've seen 2 hour and 15 minute movies that felt like they zipped by. This did not feel like it zipped by to me. Because there was so much going on in so many different places, I felt every second of it, but it was good. I didn't feel worn out by it.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I mean, I felt it in a way that when I knew, like, we were 2 hours in, I was like, wait, what? It's almost over? No! That's how I felt. Like, it didn't feel that long. But I didn't want it to end. It was.
I endured this movie. Like, it was an endurance test in a good way. Like how you feel good after you've gone like for a jog or something.
Yeah.
You know, it was good in that way. But yeah, it did not feel like it whizzed by for me. I felt like every second of it, but in the best way possible. Mm-hmm. In fact, I had watched, because I have some sort of dent in my brain, I watched like a Marvel movie a day leading up to going to see this. Mm. So I watched all of them that had been released. And I thought by the time I got to Infinity War, it's like, okay, well, I've had my fill of Marvel movies. I've watched all of them that have been released. I'm feeling pretty Marveled out. I can't wait to see Infinity War. But after that, I'm going to take a Marvel break. I watched Infinity War, and all it did was, like, rejuvenate everything. It's like, I could go back and watch some of these other movies, like, tomorrow. So, yeah, this, if anything, this got me more excited for what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely excited. Oh, and you know what? To work out the Ant-Man and the Wasp thing, to tie all the way back to that from earlier, there's talk, obviously, they go into the quantum realm, and the discussion is that maybe things work a little bit differently there in the quantum realm. There's some talk that when they come out of the quantum realm, it'll be after the events of this movie. So, like, they come out, like, that's why they're, like, nowhere to be seen in this movie.
I see.
They're in the quantum realm. They go in before the events start. But when they leave, the events have already happened. And they don't realize that the time has passed and they come out to that world. I think that would be awesome.
Yeah.
There are only two movies between now and Avengers 4, or whatever it would be. It's Ant-Man and the Wasp, and it's Captain Marvel. And Captain Marvel takes place in the 90s, although at the end of it, it'll presumably lead into the next Avengers movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, huge stuff. I guess we should note, it made a couple of dollars at the box office.
just a few.
Its opening weekend shattered every record. It shattered the month, the date, the daily and the monthly records. It shattered the domestic opening weekend record. It shattered the worldwide opening weekend record. The only record it did not actually defeat was the weekend foreign box office, which was still being held by one of those Fast and Furious movies.
Okay.
It didn't quite beat it by a little bit, but I think it opened to more than $500,000 worldwide. It was like $650 million
mm-hmm.
worldwide its opening weekend. We are here now on weekend number two, and it is already at $1.1 billion.
Yep.
So it seems like they might be making... Yeah. And there was actually... I don't know if you've heard from Jim Cameron lately. He's opened his mouth about
yeah.
a lot of things.
Yes.
But he was talking about how there's this Marvel movie fatigue going on, and I'm not sure what he's paying attention to.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the well-received, critically acclaimed movies or the incredibly high box office. Like, they have so many movies that are nearly $1 billion.
Yep.
And then they've got a handful that are over $1 billion. But, I mean, look, that last Thor movie almost made $1 billion.
Yeah, Black Panther.
Black Panther did make more than $1 billion. Yep. There is no Marvel movie fatigue right
no.
now. And there won't... I've described this to people... I mean, some people might get tired of superhero movies and stuff. Like, they're just tired of the genre. But that's an individual basis.
Yeah.
On the whole, people are not going to get tired of these movies until they start making bad ones.
Right.
And right now, they aren't making
nope.
bad... In fact, they're kind of... They kind of went into, like, a little bit of a lull. And now they're swooping back up again and getting better than they've ever been.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Lunacy, Aurora. I think we're good. I think we've talked our fill of Avengers, unless you've got anything else you would like to add.
No, I'm just excited to all the other movies that are going to come out.
There's only one regret I have with this movie. I'm going to have to see it more than once.
Yeah.
Because there are so many funny, great lines and moments in this movie
yep.
that I can't even remember half of them.
That's another reason why I want to watch it again. I know that I'm going to see details that I missed completely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is going to be a hard movie to quote from because there are so many.
Too many.
I mean, I can't even think. Tony Stark calling somebody Squidward.
Yeah.
One of the...
Grimace.
Yeah, Star-Lord mentioning how Thanos' chin looks like a giant ball sack.
Yes.
Mantis saying that we're here to kick names and take ass was a great scene. There's so many.
Yep.
Thor constantly calling Rocket Rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
That was all of that was so great. Anyway, we should probably wrap it up, Aurora. We've all got lives outside of this show, and I guess we should return to them. But I guess if you don't have a life, head on over to cinemageekly.com to check out the archives of the show. We've got 170 other episodes just of this show, but there's so many others that we've got going on. So head on over to the website, check out the archives. And, of course, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Stitcher. Just search for Cinema Geekly and hit subscribe. Of course, that's where you can find us on social media as well. Just look for us on your social media of choice at Cinema Geekly. Aurora, that is it.
Yeah.
Last time we did a Cinema Geekly podcast, it was April 5th, so literally a month ago. Hopefully, it won't be another month till some pairing comes back and does this show, but I don't know. I actually don't know what movie is coming out next. Deadpool 2? Some of us will be back to talk about Deadpool. So, for Aurora Babalu, I'm Anthony Lewis, and we'll see you next time on the Cinema Geekly podcast.